Well, we find ourselves at an odd place today. We are on the advent of Christmas. You are perhaps expecting to start hearing stories about Mary and Joseph. If you have been in the mall recently, they are playing Christmas music. If you listen to CHFI, you know that at the end of the Santa Claus parade in Toronto today, they will play Christmas music. Soon angels will be telling us that a child will be born. Shepherds will watch their flocks, and all will bow down before the Prince of Peace. This is what we are getting ready to hear, the beginning of a story. Instead, what we have today is a portion of the story that comes near the end. If you've been paying attention over the past month or so, you know that we've been reading from Luke's gospel. But today we jump ahead several chapters. And it feels odd to hear a portion of the story that comes near the end, when what we are expecting to hear is something a little closer to the beginning. It disrupts our sense of time and continuity. It's a little disorienting. However, having today's reading come near the end of the story isn't really as odd as you might think. Today is Christ the King Sunday. It is the last Sunday in the Christian year. Next week is the first Sunday in the Christian year, where we welcome Advent, the first Sunday of Advent. And so today's reading, being near the end of the gospel, is not so strange when we consider it from that perspective. And as I mentioned, it is also Christ the King Sunday, an occasion where we celebrate the kingship of Jesus Christ. We consider his role as the Messiah. What does that mean for us and for the disciples and followers of Jesus so long ago? And the question posed to Jesus by one of those criminals or thieves that day, as it was read this morning, was, "Aren't you?" But other translations render it as, "If." If you are the King of the Jews, if you are the Son of God, if you are the Messiah, save yourself. If only, if you could, if you were, if. That one word is loaded with meaning. If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself. There's temptation in that statement, isn't there? If you could save yourself, which one of us wouldn't save ourselves? If we could, we would. If I was only stronger, smarter, richer, prettier, the list goes on and on. If you look at the beginning of Luke's gospel, you will see that he has framed the ministry of Jesus around the word if. Jesus begins his ministry after fasting in the desert for 40 days and being tempted by the devil. If you are the Son of God, command this stone to become a loaf of bread. If you will worship me, it, the whole world, will all be yours. If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down from the top of the temple. It's only after being tempted by the devil that Jesus begins his ministry. After contending with those what-if scenarios, that is when Jesus begins his ministry of reconciliation. And by the way, don't be tempted yourself, for the second of those three if statements that the devil puts to Jesus, if you will worship me, it will all be yours. I've seen that on a coffee cup with chapter and verse. Well, be careful. At the beginning of his ministry, Jesus faces temptation. He deals with the question of if you are the Son of God right from the get-go. And as we draw near to the end, we find that once again, Jesus is being asked that question. If you are the Son of God, save yourself. This question from that criminal on that day is no different than anything that the devil questioned Jesus with at the beginning of his ministry. The questions that the devil laid at the feet of Jesus had to do with saving himself, of taking power, of not toiling around and living with us mortals. Why should you do such things? Is what the devil is asking Jesus. You are the Son of God. If that is true, take up your mantle and rule. And if you are the Son of God, save yourself. But Jesus does not give in to that temptation. Jesus does not relent and give over to an easy path. Jesus does not live out a fantasy framed on the word if. In fact, in our passage today, Jesus says very little. It is the other criminal who pronounces that Jesus has done nothing wrong, who recognizes that Jesus is indeed the Messiah, the Son of God. Though baffled he might be, he rebukes the other criminal who was hoping that Jesus might save him also. But that was not to be the case. Jesus came to save, but not by liberating one criminal from the cross. Jesus came to save, but it was not by jumping off of the cross himself. No, regrettably, Jesus came to embrace the cross and the vile death that awaited him. Through this act, God reconciled to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, by making peace through the blood on his cross. We see that the ministry of Jesus is wrapped in that probing question of if. But Jesus does not sink down to that lower level. It is not a case of if for Jesus, because he knows the truth of the matter. Jesus does not feel any need to prove or justify his divinity to others. And what I find remarkable about this passage is that other criminal, the one who doesn't question Jesus, the one who rebukes the other, he also asks Jesus a question. He asks, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. This criminal doesn't say, Jesus, if you come into your kingdom, remember me. He says, remember me when. There is no if. There is no need for clarification. There is no doubt, and there is no desire to test or to tempt Jesus. This criminal knows it to be true. He trusts Jesus. What he is hoping for when his life on this earth ended, we don't know. But I get the sense that he desired peace, a peace that only Jesus Christ can offer. And we sing the words of a criminal in church. This man's request to Jesus is one of our hymns. The hymn isn't large or robust. It contains two lines, the second being a repetition of the first. And they are the words of this criminal. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Amen.